Your hosts have earned a reputation as fierce and effective advocates inside and outside of the courtroom. Both partners are experienced trial attorneys who have been board certified in family law by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization.
Okay, thanks for tuning in to the For Better, Worse, or Divorce podcast, where we provide you tips and insight on how to navigate divorce and child custody situations. I'm Brian Walters, and today Dr. Daphne Ainslie from Ainslie Consulting is here with me. Daphne's a licensed psychologist in Austin who conducts forensic evaluations and consultations along with clinical and diagnostic assessments and psychotherapy. She also does child custody evaluations and other court-related work. I work with Daphne on several cases, and I thought you'd be a perfect guest to have on to discuss child custody evaluations in general. So thanks for joining us today, Daphne.
Well, thank you for having me, Mr. Walters. Happy to be here, Brian.
You bet. Well, give us a little history of how you got here, and don't just give us the boring academic stuff. You know, where did you grow up? What was your childhood like? How did you decide to get into where you are? And so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I come from a very small coastal town in Texas. And
which one, out of curiosity, because that's where my family's from, that area too.
Oh, interesting. So I'm from Rockport, Texas.
Yeah. My mom grew up and went to Aransas Pass High School. My dad in Corpus. I have an aunt and uncle that live in Rockport. My parents live 3 miles from Rockport right now. They live in Aransas. Small world.
It's a small, good world. And that's even a smaller world down there. I mean, I couldn't wait to get out of there. But these days, I love going back. It's really fun just to be very simple on the coast and enjoy some fishing and great seafood. And my parents' families, my dad's family in particular, has been there for generations. So, you know, the salt is part of my history here. You know, how did I get into psychology? I had this really great high school teacher, and he was a psychologist, and he taught my first ever class in psychology. And at that point, I was just pretty captivated by it. I really liked how this is a field where we're always learning, and there is so much to be explored and understood. And it's really something to kind of meet people, and then there is so much behind all of us. And so your opening question, I'm so impressed by, you know, like, really, let's really talk about yourself. And it's funny that I hesitated, but I think that's what we all do in some form. It's not easy to be open all the time. So I really liked psychology and the history of it and how it's a constantly evolving field. But in order to do the work that I do today in my practice, or I'd say the majority of the work that I do today, which is evaluation, I had to have a history of assessment experience and training. So I began that when I was getting my doctorate education, and I just sought it out. And initially, I was working with psychologists in San Antonio, which is where I completed my doctorate. And I just found it really kind of another level of gaining data about someone and then trying to interpret that and understand it and then utilize that information against other information that's collected. So initially I was doing academic assessments and clinical assessments and intellectual assessments. And I did a lot of work with adults. Then I also did some training, what would be like the old Brown schools now. So got a lot of training with kids, which was unique and special. I also did my first forensic work was actually at the San Antonio State Hospital when I did some competency work. And there was a judge there that came to the state hospital weekly. And in part, it was my job as a practicum student, but to kind of work with the individuals on the unit and give an opinion about and recommendation about competency. So it was there that I thought, this is really something different. This is something unique. It's all important. I think the work that we all do. But I thought this is a different way of kind of capturing what's happening for someone. So that's kind of where I had my first forensic interest. And then with the assessment experience, I thought this is something that I can do and grow and learn more about.
Yeah, that makes sense. I found over the years that I have an undergraduate degree in business, which has been helpful running a business, but I kind of wish I had had a more, I think I had to take one psychology and one sociology class as, you know, part of my undergrad, but I wish I'd had a lot more. And I found those skills are more valuable to me, and I've kind of had to learn them the hard way, I think, in just dealing with clients and dealing with other lawyers and other professionals and judges, just that psychology stuff. I would say someone who has an undergraduate degree in psychology probably be a good start if you're going to be a family lawyer, maybe an MBA then on top of it if you're going to run your own firm. But that's the skills I wish I'd had more of, especially earlier in my career. So it's interesting. So let's talk about child custody evaluations. So in child custody cases, and that could be people that are married, or they never married and had a kid, or they are going back to court to modify something that was done earlier. I'll say, just as a lawyer, there used to not be anything real specific about that, and they've now added a statute in the family code that allows for these, and it's got very specific requirements about what is to be looked at, what the qualifications are for folks. But and so what happens is that a court will decide there needs to be one, often by the request of both parties, but sometimes by one party, or sometimes the judge just decides to do it on their own. And the judge will say, I'd like to have one of these done to help me or our jury decide how we're going to deal with this. So can you talk a little bit about the child custody evaluations and how they work? What are they trying to do? And comparing and contrasting those maybe a little bit with psychological evaluations, psychiatric evaluations, how they're similar, how they're different.
Sure. Good question. So what usually happens on my side of it is the court and attorneys will figure out what's needed. And custody evaluators generally enter the picture once it's ordered. So it's very important for your clients, participants in these evaluations, to understand what that is. And typically, a custody evaluation follows the statute, or it should. So it's really important to just for custody evaluators to know what's in that statute, to review it, and to check for updates. So a perfect example is our legislative session the regular session just ended. And so it's a good time to go back and revisit what changes might be taking place in September. So that's something that I've got on my calendar to keep an update about.
Me too.
Yeah, because there will be changes typically, or updates. And so I guess that's in part, as what I was saying earlier, this is an evolving field. We're always trying to do better. And I think that that's really important to review. You asked about child custody evaluations specifically in comparison to those that are forensic or psychological evaluations, kind of more generally. A custody evaluation, I really think about it as a very deep dive into the life of a family or a family system. And as you said, that could be a divorcing couple that was married, and it could be, people who were never married before and are trying to decide and agree or come to a decision about what's best for our child or children in terms of how much time that each of them gets with us, and how is that decided? Who will be the ultimate decider of that, which is typically a judge or a jury? In order to get to those recommendations, a custody evaluator will make some recommendations. I think that's the ultimate goal. I think that's what the endeavor is to gather data, synthesize it, interpret it, and give those conclusions and recommendations to the court. To gather the data, that takes several steps, and it's a long process. And I think that's one thing I really want to underscore, that it really does take a lot of time. I think people would be surprised at how long it takes, but it is a process that you typically want it done really well. You want it to be very thorough, and you want to have some solid conclusions and recommendations at the end of the process, which means time. It also means, I'll just put it out there, these are typically, because of the time that it takes to complete them, it's going to cost a chunk of money. And so that's something I think people should be aware of and really think about when moving through this process, what it will take of them. I like to tell people that I evaluate, and it's partly in my informed consent, we're going to be looking pretty deeply into your life. We're going to want a life history. We want to interview you, typically for several hours over a period of time. Custody evaluations will gather data from collateral informants. So that could be teachers, nannies, family members, people who might be able to speak to questions about parenting or questions about history or questions about co-parenting for that matter. Also important is a review of records. So if there's any records that need to be reviewed pertaining to the parents, pertaining to the children in the family. I'm a psychologist and I'll do some psychological assessment. I don't know, it's not required by the statute, but it is an option of the statute. So I think that's something to remember, that there may be psychological assessment taking place and a custody evaluation. I would say, and Brian, maybe you can tell me more about this, but I say typically it does happen. There's a component of that. And if the custody evaluator doesn't do it, then someone else, a psychologist, would typically. So what's also unique to custody evaluations are home visits. So you'll have someone come into each home and observe the parent and the child or children. And I think that's really important to have an observation period of time. Typically, I also have people bring a child or children to my office, depending on the circumstance. And each family is unique. So these are not cookie cutter evaluations, but you really have to consider the structure of the family and what's possible. Typically, a report should explain all of this, what's happening, what the limitations might be. And based on all of the data collected, these are the conclusions and recommendations.
Yeah, that makes sense. And another question is, how do we figure out which child custody evaluator we're going to use? And it's interesting. I found, I work in big cities, Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, usually, and there are a surprisingly small number of folks that we have to choose from. I think there's a couple reasons for that. I've found that most people, mental health providers included, don't like to be in court and don't like to be cross-examined and attacked and all that other stuff, which is, what's going to happen to a child custody evaluator in a case if someone, maybe both, are not going to like some or all of the conclusions. And then, of course, there are some pretty high requirements. So generally, to answer that question, I found that most of the time, the courts and the attorneys usually know who those folks are, and you will usually be able to agree on, hey, let's use this person. They have done good jobs for me in the past, or they're fair, they're open, whatever. The judges have a list of folks as well, although they're often the same list. So that's usually not that difficult of a thing to do. And I know that clients want to know, will this one help me or that one help me and, be more favorable to me? I think generally that's not the way the courts or attorneys think about it. We're trying to find somebody who's going to do a good, thorough job.
I really would agree with that, because a custody evaluator is ordered by the court. So the client of the custody evaluator is the court. And there are two sides in the case, however. And so typically it might feel to some that there is a tendency to really support one side or the other. And to the degree that you can, we can stay away from that, I think that's best, because we really do want conclusions and recommendations that are really in the best interest of the child or children and overall of the family. And it's not atypical for there to be some recommendations that may be inconsistent with the way someone in the family system thinks about him or herself or their family system.
I agree. So there's a lot of things that a child custody evaluation can evaluate and ultimately make recommendations about. And just to be clear for everybody, it's a recommendation, right? It's ultimately the judge or the jury who makes a decision if the parents can't decide on what they're going to do. So if a child custody evaluator evaluates it and recommends dad have custody, the judge might disagree and go the other way. Just to be clear about that, it doesn't have the force of law, although they're I think very important to a judge, and the judges pay very close attention to them and very frequently follow or very closely follow what's recommended. So I've found that the cases kind of fall into two categories. One is just a custody case where you've got two parents who probably have pretty good claims to be the primary custodial parent. Maybe they're both, very active parents. They both have, are good functioning people without problems. And it's a close call, and court wants somebody to kind of make a recommendation which way to lean. The second category I found is kind of typically is where there's a problem and we're with one of the parents, or maybe both, but usually one parent, and we're dealing with what kind of controls, restrictions, parameters are we going to put on their contact with the children to protect the children from, either an addiction issue or a mental health problem. I mean, there's always gradations. Sometimes both are at issue. But Has that been your finding or your experience that those are the two main categories, or do you find there's others as well?
You know, I think I would agree with you that I think that's a good summary of the two main categories. You know, as you and I both know, I mean, all families are different. So I see new families all the time, you know, with things that I never would have imagined before. But I think typically these are situations just as you described. I would agree with that.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, for better or worse, our system in Texas requires, if you go to trial, basically requires the court to pick a primary parent. That word is never actually in a court order, but that's essentially what it is. And then from there, everything kind of flows off of it. The non-primary parent gets typically a standard possession order. It typically has to pay child support on a very, very firm, clear calculation, et cetera. So everything kind of tips off of that primary custodial choice. I'm not sure that'll be the law 10 years from now, but that's what it is now. And so that's why that first category is important, is who is going to be primary, because so many other things flow from that. And then, of course, the second one is the, you know, if we have a problem, how are we going to address it? Let's say you've got an alcohol problem with one of the parents. Well, you know, the evaluation, I think, typically might include an evaluation of that problem. How severe is it? How long has it been going on? How far along are they in the process of controlling it? What is the likelihood of falling back into using? If they did fall back into using, how severe of a problem would that be? So that's again typically what I've found. So lastly, let's talk a little bit about what a parent who's going to go through an evaluation is going to experience and what they should do. I'll talk about it first from someone as an attorney representing folks, and then you can kind of talk about it from your perspective. I mean, I think, first of all, they should talk to their lawyer carefully and openly, and a lawyer should be honest with them. You know, like, hey, you know, you've got an issue here. You have a history, the example I just used, you've got a history of drinking excessively. So that's going to come up, and it's not going to help you to deny it ever happened or say you don't have a problem or blame it on something else. You know, just be open and honest and talk about it. And then I need to talk to them about the process. And I think you're exactly right. This process can take a long time. It can be very expensive, and they need to be prepared for that. They're not going to just walk in, meet with you for 10 minutes and convince you they're totally great and should be able to do whatever they want to. It doesn't work like that. So they need to be self-aware and patient, I think. So that's typically the advice that I would give them. What helps you to get through the process with them effectively? I think you touched on it a bit about things, but when folks are most helpful to you to get to be able to do your job effectively, what are some characteristics of those type of people?
That's a great question. I like to start with, if I may, just take one step back and just say, you know, at the outset, is having a good order that really says, Dr. Forensic Evaluator, Custody Evaluator, we really want you to answer these questions to the degree that you can. I won't pretend that anybody may have all the answers. However, we'll try to get really close to answering those things. So to we continue on the example of excessive alcohol use, a question about alcohol use should probably be in that order if you want that evaluator to look at that. So I find having the questions listed within the body of the order is really important. That also tells your client this evaluator will be looking at these questions. So be prepared to speak to them. I like to tell anybody, any party who walks through my door, you know, ask questions as you have them. I will do my best to answer them to the degree that I can during this process. If not, you have hired an attorney. Please lean on him or her to answer questions that you have along this process, because we want you to be informed. And that's partly my role as well, is to secure that informed consent. People who walk into my office that I do these for are ordered to participate. So if they choose not to, then that's a legal issue for them, not for me, because anybody who comes in, I've got a form that says that these are the expectations. You know, we want you to show up. I need you to respond to me. This is not an easy process. You're going to be under, might call it the microscope, for a period of time. Do your best to be honest, and that may be challenging. But typically, psychological assessments will be able to inform us if there's dishonesty that may arise. Also, we're going to be looking at these elements of your life. And I think it's important just to be honest and open and cooperative with the process. Typically, people who are participating in this may be in therapy. And I think that's a decision that individual has to make because it can be helpful while in this process. So something to think about for your clients. Let's see. Other things that I might tell people is try to come at this with the understanding that I really believe it, that most of us who work in this area, it's difficult. It's very important. And we're all doing our best to get to recommendations. And I think judges are doing their best to make recommendations and orders that are in the best interest of the children.
Yeah, I agree. And that's difficult, right? I mean, folks are in an unpleasant divorce and whatever the complaint is, again, we'll use the alcohol example. If that's just been probably a thorn in their relationship and marriage for years, and the last thing they want to do is hear more about it. And last thing they want to do is acknowledge that maybe their spouse had a point, or, you know, maybe it's not black and white. And, but I don't think that helps anybody. I mean, because we're dealing with kids, right? And so we're trying to put aside our needs and wants as adults and focus on the kids, but it often isn't that easy. Lastly, we've talked a lot about going in front of a judge and the judge is ultimately going to decide things. But my experience has been, I don't know what the percentages are, but it's a pretty high percentage, is that the child custody evaluation often helps us to settle a case that would otherwise be impossible to settle. The classic one is the custody case. That's a close custody case. And, you know, if we just went to mediation before trial, both sides would be able to say legitimately, in mediation, look, I think I have a 50-50 chance at it. It's worth it for me to try it. I don't want to waste money, but my kids are more important than money. And then they go try the case. Where if we have a child custody evaluation that's come down, you know, clearly it's well done. It's clearly on, let's say it's on mom's side. It's going to be real hard for dad to be in the mediation room and you know, kind of pound the table and insist on a trial, because that's going to tip it from being a 50-50 case to a case that favors mom. And so a lot of times that'll bring a settlement to the case, which I think is almost always the best choice for parents who are in a conflict with each other. Not always, but most of the time. And likewise, if there's a significant behavioral issue, again, let's use the alcohol example, you know, and the child custody evaluation concludes, yeah, there is a dad's got a problem with it and he's addressing it, but he's in the early stages of addressing it. And we're not ready to, it's not going to be fair to these kids to just completely ignore it, right? We need some controls, some monitoring in place for a certain period of time. And then hopefully there's no problems after that. And that'll often get the case settled, because dad's going to have to deal with that and know that if he goes into court, the judge is probably going to see it the same way and is probably going to impose those restrictions on him. So I think it's generally been helpful. So is that your observation? Although there's not 100% success rate, obviously. I wouldn't go to court.
That's right. But I would agree with you. My experience is that after I conduct these, again, I don't have a percentage either. It would be interesting to get that number. However, most of the time I send these to the attorneys and there's mediation that happens and parents can figure it out. And it could be like, we've decided on this schedule for our kids and our family, and this is the way it will be. Or just like you said, you know, we're going to step this up over time and everybody's going to have a chance to do better. And in your example, if dad's the one with the alcohol problem, mom's going to have to just let him go through this process of recovery or whatever that might look like for this family and be supportive of the process. And so I think it gives everybody some time to adjust. And what I found also is typically after these situations take place, a custody evaluation is done, people can exhale and kind of lean into what is going to be their new normal for their family. And I think when parents can do that, kids ultimately benefit from it.
Right. Which is a good way to end the podcast probably, which is that's the whole purpose of this, was to protect the children and put them in the best possible place. you know, basically to make as good of a situation as we can out of a bad one, which is, you know, these two parents are divorcing or having a custody battle. Okay, well, that's all we have for today. If you like what you've heard today, do us a favor and leave a review. We appreciate all your feedback, especially when it helps better the podcast. If you're interested in reaching out to Daphne directly, we'll have her contact info in the episode notes. Can't thank you enough, Daphne, for joining us today. As always, if you have any follow-up questions on this episode or would like to talk to one of us directly about your family law situation, reach out to us at podcast@waltersgilbreth.com or just contact us through our website, waltersgilbreth.com. I'm Brian Walters, and thank you for listening.
For information about the topics covered in today's episode and more, you can visit our website at waltersgilbreth.com. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of For Better, Worse, or Divorce, where we post new episodes every first and third Wednesday. Do you have a topic you want discussed or a question for our hosts? Email us at podcast@waltersgilbreth.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time.